I'm not used to having a crowd of this size where we go. I work at two places. We run from 13 to 17 most of the time at both of those places. 17, the high number at each one of them. But I feel like I need to say that I surely appreciate what this group has done for Rita and I. And I can't hardly leave without saying a little bit about Rick. If you hadn't heard of me before now, he might not be a good friend. We go back as far as dirt, almost. We was talking this afternoon, we go back to about 1972. When he preached at the little congregation that I'm preaching at now. And of course he preached earlier at Red Hill, where I also go to work in Cannon County. I'm a dairy farmer by profession. I worked in that 45, 6 years. But the heart took me down from that. I had surgery about a year and a half ago. And it's been a slow getting well. But hopefully we get better. Want to thank this group for their hospitality. Want to thank Rick and Janet for having us over last night. And I want to thank Rick for all the times we studied together through the years. It helped me a lot. And I realized probably that I couldn't have done what I'd done without his knowledge. In observation of his sermon this morning, Janet asked me earlier, she said, "Do you think Rick slowed up a little bit?" I said, "Yeah, probably. He's probably slowed up a little bit. But if he would speed back up, the group could leave 15 minutes quicker." But he knows I'm just playing with him. I've been in a series of lessons for several weeks, even months, I guess, when individuals of our congregation started asking me what I felt was the problem with the church and why the church is diminishing all across this land. They didn't want necessarily item by item, but they wanted the major items that were affecting us, why they came to be, and where are they going to end up. Religion in this country has been attacked on every side. I know that when I talk to others. I know that when I talk to the folks in my group. Because many of the members of groups that should be more mature than what they are not. And my point about that is this, and that is, they are the future of the New Testament church. And if the church slows or weakens, then the future is going to be slow and weakened. When you read about it in writings, you see that indeed these facts must be true. But ask that question, what I think the biggest problem facing us is the problem that exists in Amos 3. In the book of Amos, chapter 3, of course we know that the Israelites of old, the people of God that should have been better than they were on many occasions, were constantly having one problem right after another one. And the writer there talks about the fact that he was going to punish them because of their iniquities. Now we know these iniquities are referred to as transgression of law. God desires that we understand that concept. And when we talk to churches many times, that's not the audience we really need to be talking to. It's the audience that is out there in the world that needs our help. Yes, I understand we need encouragement on every side because the difficulties are so great, especially in this age in which we live. But then God comes down to verse 10. And he says to the people, they know not to do right. Now we find that that's a difficult statement, I guess, if you were to hear that statement about oneself. But again, we can look at it as a benefit to, hopefully, to wake them up. To get them to change their way of living, the way of thinking, and get back on track serving God. But I want us to think just a moment what that really means. For they know not to do that which is right. And why does it come to be that he makes such a statement? We know that generation after generation had gotten away from the basic fundamental principles of God's Word. Their children were not taught. The next generation was not taught. And then boom, they change their mind and they start doing better. But those generations were lost. In many cases, never to be redone. And I'm afraid that we're seeing much of that even in this age in which we live. So they just simply did not know what they should be doing. But there's other reasons that may not have faced them that will face us. In this same area, make application of the same principles, and we'll do well to make those applications. Whether it be the unlearned of his word, or whether it be idolatry that we face all the time, things that we love, or whether it be minds in the wrong place that affects people of our age in our time, or whether it's religious folks but religiously wrong. It doesn't matter what the reason is that would cause God to make that statement. But the problem is that he would make such a statement about his people. But these are part of the reasons why that he might make the same statements about you and I in this age. And when I say you and I, remember, I'm not talking to individuals necessarily here, but this society that we live in. Those that we don't get a chance and an opportunity to speak to on a regular basis. But I'm reminded again of the writing of Jesus in Matthew's account, the 7th chapter. And going down to about verse 21 of that text, Jesus says, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. And many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? In thy name have we cast out devils? And in thy name done many wonderful works." But notice the next verse. "And then what I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity." There we are again on that same word, that he was talking to those children in Amos chapter 3. And God said, I'm going to punish you for your iniquities. But something about these folks is different, as we are accustomed to seeing, and that they are religious people. At least they had some religious things on their mind. In verse 22, they're going to call on the Lord's name as we look at that passage. And they're going to prophesy in his name. And they're going to cast out the devils and whatever's included in many wonderful words. But Jesus says, depart from me, ye that work iniquity. I'm reminded again in the same passage, chapter 7 and verse 24. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And then, when we look at verse 26, and everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. Just one verse in between. The extreme of the two parties that are involved. One he says is wise, and the other one he says is foolish. Now we understand it's not hard in most cases to figure out who is who. Because the reality is, we know. I know whether or not I'm living right, and so do you. And so do other people in other places. And they know when they're not, just as well. And as this lesson goes forward, we're going to see that unfold in this lesson. But we think, I think sometimes, that it had never happened to me. That's somebody else over there that does this or does that. Used to, I would think more that way in many things than I do now. Used to, we didn't have drugs and things of this nature around our house. And now I'm almost telling the truth when I say that's all we do have around our house. Because the folks that have moved in to the park in our neighborhood, that's what they do. Every single day. Every single night. And they even know that they're doing those things. But the question is, do they know that those things are sinful? Do they know those things are not pleasing in the eyes of God? A few years ago, I had the opportunity to be contacted by a close friend of mine who was getting a divorce. She went to her elders and asked for more study on that subject. They mentioned very little to her. And if they did respond, well, if you do that, you're in adultery. She would ask the preacher at that place, will you help me out? Will you help me study on the subject? They would refuse to do that because they were afraid they would lose their job. Because they're well paid. And the third thing was, according to their members, the congregation is about half and half. Now, you think about situations like that and ask ourselves the question, is it possible that the world has gone to that point that That kind of number is even in the church and not just on the outside. And that going back to that, it had never happened to me. As I look around about me and recognize what's going on, it's here. We are facing these things right now. But in this age, you can almost add any subject that you want to add to that list. And in modern day time, there'll be groups that have problems and issues with it. How many times have you talked to someone lately about the plan of salvation? And they don't have the same point of view that you have about that very thing. That situation is now present. Now, having worked on this subject for a great period of time, because we was having trouble at one of the places that I attended, I was gung-ho and ready to go. I knew what the Bible said on that subject. And as I set that young girl down, not once, not twice, but many, many, many different times, at the end of the day, I think she drew the right conclusion. And the conclusion she drew was, I didn't have the right to be married to him to begin with. That's not one of the world. This is in the church. That people many times find themselves in those kinds of messes. I want to break down this message in two categories. The first one, I want to approach it from the worldview. And the second thing I want to approach it from is the view of God. And if we'll do that on just about every single subject, we're going to end up with a lot of differences. Worldview and God's view. God's view being things that pertain to the New Testament church. Whatever the subject is, it makes no difference. Whatever pertains to that source, and the worldview is everything else. Now, sometimes the worldview may have some of God's views. And most of the time they do that very thing. But God's side should never have their view unless it's God's view. And that makes the difference between the two. So I want us to keep that clearly in our mind as we look at our study on this worldview and God's view. The worldview involving sinful activities of our day that is almost unbearable to those that have God's view. You take abortion. You take the gay rights and things of this nature. Yes, we understand as a citizen of the United States of America, they have rights. And whatever those rights are that is given to them by this country, rest assured, the reckoning will come when they compare it with God's view. Now, either that will happen, or God has misdirected us in going to all this trouble writing this book for us to read and study it, teach ourselves, and then teach our children for the next generation. This is when a place like West Knoxville comes into play. West Knoxville is the future of God's view in this area. Just like I believe that we are the future of God's view in our area. And we, like you, strive to the best of our ability to follow that view precisely. Not almost like it, but precisely like his view. And you know, that makes us different. But I tell you something else it does. It makes us hated by the world. I said about 15 years ago, standing in a pulpit, maybe around 15 years, in Springfield, Tennessee. It's the last time you heard me, Rick, I think. And I said, the day will come that people will come through your door and they will kill you. That day is closer to home than we think, isn't it? And the danger sometimes of those that come through the door is not the false teachers. Because if they come into your place and they tell you, I'm a false teacher, you done turned them off. You're not going to listen because you believe in God's view. But it's those right in our midst. They nitpick here, they nitpick there, and pretty soon you got a party going. And if we are not careful with good leadership, they split those churches right down the middle. I don't have to tell you I read about that. I witnessed that myself in my lifetime. Well, if that kind of thing would take place. The West Knoxville can make a difference for the world. Not just here, but in other areas as well. And if there's ever a time that the next generation needs these kind of things, it is now. I want to give you an example. Going again to the Old Testament law. In the book of Genesis chapter 3, it's not a passage that we don't know about. It's a passage we are very familiar with. It's the story of Adam and Eve. And in chapter 3 and verse 1, the serpent asked Eve a question. And he asked her the question, did God say, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? Did he say that? Now, whether it's how Satan said it, because I realize that there's a two-sided coin as to what people think that means, but when it's all said and done, it's the same thing. There's some who say that Satan is saying, indeed God said that you should not eat of this tree in the garden, the one that he told them not to eat. Or if he's asking, has God said this? At the end of that story, it's the same. Because the issue is, what is God's view in Genesis 3 and verse 1? And then ask ourselves the question, what would the world view be? Would there be a difference? Would they oppose one another? And we can ask that with every single question that we can think of. But in chapter 3 and going further, this time in verse 23, he says, therefore the Lord God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. Why do we read that verse? We read that verse because in every situation that involves man and God, they were to follow rules. Even Adam and Eve in the very beginning of time. a simple rule, don't eat of that tree or you're going to die. You come up to the next generation, the law changed, they had to follow that rule. Until we come to the present. And that theory then is still the same. What is God's view? Because the reckoning is coming. And again, we can't overemphasize, it may come, it might come, but it's coming. And verse 23 is part of that reckoning. Let's notice something about them just for a moment. Satan's reasoning was concerning and appealing to anything and everything that a normal person would want. We all appeal to certain things. Well, I would even like to have had what Satan said we could have got. Have all wisdom, knowledge, and know as gods. Who wouldn't turn that down? But the issue goes beyond that. Yes, it's good to know right from wrong and to have this wisdom. But the issue was obedience. What did God say? He said to Eve, don't eat it because you will die. End of the story. But Eve then in returns made a decision. She made the decision that that food was good. And she ate it. We see so many times our young folks leaving. Back in my neck of the woods, the congregations are relatively small. It's probably 20 congregations in a 15-mile radius of religious folks. Half of those probably are members of the church. But in every case, they have issues. And the issues are that they get away from the pages of the book. And when people ask us about these things, and we decide we're going to, for example, talk about that subject, then it is going to involve these kind of details. And remembering that the reckoning is coming to us as well. That we are responsible for what we do. That we stay on that right page. But when Eve made the decision she made, she gave up God's truth and took Satan's lie. Whatever else he would have made up, it would have been taken and put on her back. Every time we trade truth for a lie, we do damage not only to ourselves but those round about us. And that goes back to our lesson on mom and dads and children and grandchildren. We need one another. We need the old codgers that are our mom and dads of old to teach us young folks what we should have been doing. And we need the young folks to keep the next generation going the same way. But she traded a lie. Something that she knew for something that she did not know. And if and when we do the same thing, why would the results be any different? And the answer is, it won't be any different. It'll be the same. But remember that old slogan we hear. It's not going to affect me. But rest assured, it will down the road. at some point in time. She lost fellowship. God asked Adam, after they go through this series of passing the buck, so to speak, he says, Adam, where are you? When he comes down to the next chapter, chapter 4, he asks Cain, where's your brother? Have you ever stopped to consider what's involved in that question, where are you? Because every single one of us answered that question one way or another every single day. And what God intended for us to get from that is that Adam had to know where he was before he could fix it. It's the same way with people who go to the hospitals. They have something wrong. They have to know what it is before they can fix it. Johnny Cash was asked by his dad, where were you? When Johnny's brother fell into the table saw, and Johnny Cash immediately responded back to his dad, well, Dad, where were you? As if it was the situation, you're the daddy in the place. I was a 13-year-old boy or a 14-year-old boy. There's a time and a place and a responsibility to go with them. Young folks, a lot of things are taking place in our society. It's going to be a difficult task to maintain our purity one way or other. Because the slogan that floats around is, everybody's doing it. And if everybody's doing it, then we need to be doing it. Peer pressure runs out the roof. But young folks, you look at older folks like me, which I'm not near those rich. And you say, what do you know about peer pressure? I know quite a bit about peer pressure. I was telling Rick some of them today, I played basketball in 70, 71, and 72, and graduated in 73. I was the point guard from Manchester, Tennessee. My coach would not let me ride in the back of the bus. Not because I was mean, but because I was the team leader. And my job was to keep them out of mischief. And I say, well, that'd be something that quickly passes by. But it follows you. 2 years ago, I went to North Carolina to a wedding. One of my former ball players was there. And his wife walks up, says, I want to thank you for protecting those sophomores from the peer pressure of that day. And some of that was pretty mean stuff. So I know what it is to be involved in peer pressure. And I know how hard it is to avoid it. But I'm an example of one who did. Many are not that example of one who does. And it's a very valuable lesson for the next generation to know in regard to these things. But then, when we look at what they lost, the pleasures of sin, because we think sin is fun. And most of the time, sin is fun stuff. That's why churches many times are getting so involved in it. Because that's what draws the crowds. But we need to be converted to the Lord. You convert them on a hot dog, you'll have to keep them on a hot dog. An old preacher of mine from long ago would say, And if you'll follow that market, you will find, and indeed that is true. But when Eve traded the truth for a lie, it kind of worked like old age on youth. It's not very pleasant. But then when in reality, I want to look at one more just for a moment, and that was old Moses. Exodus 32. We come to the end of the Egyptian captivity. God had told him he'd bring them out, he'd send them to the land of Canaan. It was a land that flowed with milk and honey. He would give them houses they didn't build. He'd let them win wars that they didn't fight. What more could they have asked for? The 40 years wandering was because they were not mature. They were not allowed to go into the promised land because they were not mature. Is that a lesson for us? That here we are, 40 years later, and we are no more mature today than we were years ago? If so, it's time for us to wake up our brain to that situation. And this is the message we need to take to the world. The world's going to have to wake up, or it's going to be very bad when it's all said and done. But when we think about Moses, who demonstrated his faithfulness, you also think about Aaron, who kind of went along with the crowd, don't you? Give me your gold and your silver. I break them all. And after all of this short story unfolds, they end up with the golden calf. Now, what happened with that? What was the deal? They knew about the plagues. They knew what it was for 430 years. They knew about going to that promised land. But yet they still did it anyway. And that's a lesson for us. People do it anyway when it's all said and done. So in conclusion, I want to note a few things that would be good advice for anybody. Young, old, middle, it makes no difference. If you ever find yourself reaching the point that you are willing to compromise truth, God's view, you can rest assured you're beginning to slip. If you prefer the worldly view over God's view, you can rest assured you've already slipped. If you think that sin doesn't hurt, then we are pretty blind to what God thinks about sin. And finally, if we think that it can't be helped, it's just an act of society. Sometimes people have the tendency to say, but it can be helped. And it can be helped by studying this book with appropriate leadership that makes sure we get the knowledge that we need and then put that knowledge into practice. If you happen to be in the audience and you need service of one kind or another, if you'll come forward while they're singing this song, I think Brother Rick would take care of the matter.